Welcome, everybody, to the Help for Hip Dysplasia podcast. I am absolutely thrilled to be able to bring you this group discussion today. We're doing things a little differently. So, we have people from all over the world here for our discussion today on mobility aids and hip dysplasia. It's a conversation that has been incredible on socials so far. I put out a post a few weeks ago about my first experience with my walking stick on a long day out, and the conversations that sparked from it were wonderful. We've also had some really incredible conversations in our Q&A groups on the Patreon that have just really sparked the confidence to be able to bring this conversation into the world. So thank you so much, everybody, for being here. I do want to acknowledge that with hip dysplasia, there are so many different levels of mobility that people have. Some people are unable to weight bear, some people are unable to walk, and some people can climb mountains and run marathons. It's a very, very widespread level of mobility within hip dysplasia. And I want to start by just acknowledging the privilege that I have, in that I am able to walk. That's why I want to invite this group conversation to open it out to every level of mobility and be able to acknowledge everybody's experience from every level, to open that conversation. What are the things that have made us hesitate about having walking aids before? It's quite a broad question. I want to see if anyone wants to kick us off because it's quite an emotional discussion. It's a very, very vast question, but I wonder what it sparks for any of you and whether anyone wants to kick us off. Yeah, please, Georgina.
So the walking aids I've used in the past are crutches. I'm currently like in the process of coming off crutches again. So I'm sure everyone can relate how many times you come off crutches. The thing that might stop me from getting a more permanent walking aid would be it gets in the way. It's a bit annoying. And also like the judgment that you get from people. I think like with hip dysplasia, it's something that's not very easy to identify if you don't really know what it is. So you kind of get like, even when I was on crutches, like post-surgery, kind of walking normally because I'm using my crutches. But if you take that away, then suddenly you realize like how much I can't walk. And I think like using that walking aid, some people are like, well, why are you using that? You look young, you look fit and healthy. Like, why?
Hi, I'm Meg. I'm from Australia. So, feelings about disability aids, I used to resent them because it meant that I was in a place with my hip that was visible for everyone to see, everyone to comment on, everyone to ask questions about. Now, that side of things is just more of an irritation, I suppose, of having to use a mobility aid. I have good feelings about mobility aids now, I think, about using them. Hesitations about using a mobility aid, though. I used to work in a supermarket and I would regularly have to use a crutch while at work. And the amount of people that would ask, well, what have you done? What's wrong with you? So I don't know you, like, it's a bit weird, but because you know you're working on a checkout and you can't get away from them. So I ended up saying things like, oh, I saved a baby from a runaway horse and just walk off. Joys of self-checkout. So things like that. And it also makes it more obvious that there is something wrong. So people tend to stare, they do ask questions. And most of the time I'm okay with people asking questions about it and you just kind of ignore people's stares. But you do reach a point where you're in a lot of pain by that point, like at least I am. So I get sick of that. So it's actually from that perspective easier to just limp because people tend to notice less, I found, than using a crutch, for example. And also then it's also I feel like I'm giving in to the pain then when I do need the crutch. I reach a point that I actually need it, and I feel like I've given in to the pain by that point, and I hate that it then reaches that it's controlling the situation now. That's kind of what it feels like.
My name is Claire, and I have been a mobility aid user on and off since 2019. I think over the past 5 years, having used them on and off and from there, having learned firsthand and witnessed from my lived experiences the benefits of them and the positives that the AIDS have brought to my life, has really helped me see them in a positive light. The hesitations that I do still face and encounter are mostly around using my mobility aids in a new social setting, or using new mobility aids in a social setting. There is that very human, normal, I'd like to think, hesitation with feeling a slight embarrassment or awkwardness around not wanting to be to draw attention to myself or to stand out, particularly in a new social setting. So that is where I feel my hesitations lie with my current journey of using mobility aids.
I think, like, for me, I was quite young when I was using the cane, the stick. I was around 30, I think, at the time. So I think for me, it was like, I found it quite embarrassing to use it. And also I felt like if you had crutches, people kind of just thought you had an injury, and that was sort of, they just, oh, she's hurt herself. Well, whereas with a stick or a cane, I felt like there was more of a stigma, or more of a, people like would look at you and wonder what was wrong with this young person with a cane, because I think a lot of people tend to think they're for old people. So I think I tended to use it like strategically. Like, I didn't want to use it where people like I knew would see me. Whereas like I used it quite a bit in that time. I went to Europe, to England and France, partly to see a surgeon, but I used it more there because I think I felt like there were less people that knew me there. Whereas around home, like I would try and not use it, because I just, and I guess also that, like what you said with the imposter syndrome, like it, I felt like, oh, maybe people think I'm being dramatic, or like, does she really need that? So that was kind of my experience with that.
Thank you.
And
for
I mean, it was 6 years ago, so they were like, there wasn't anything like what you posted on Instagram, cool looking ones. It was like, it had like butterflies on it. It was really ugly.
I love,
yeah, it didn't look like that.
So
like
much
that. It was like an old lady.
Yeah, I would say for me, I was 56 when I had my hip replaced, and I'd had hip pain for many years, but there were reasons why I didn't have surgery for a long time, partly because when I was younger, the hip implants had a shorter lifespan. So it's like, okay, if you get your hip replaced, then it's going to have to be revised and revised again, probably during your lifetime. And also, you know, I had kids, I was working and all that. So, and PAO was not an option for me because of my congruency issues in my hip. So it was kind of total hip or nothing. So I waited as long as possible. So I was old enough that when I had a cane, I didn't care at all about using it. I mean, one thing I noticed that was easier is people would immediately understand I had an issue, because previously I would have to limit, you know, like certain things, like how long I stand or walk on concrete, for example. And if you have an invisible disability, people just assume you can do things, like, let's say you're a parent volunteer in your child's school and they want you to do yard duty, and you have to say, oh, I can't do that. And they're like, why? It's like, well, I really can't stand and walk for 45 minutes on concrete. And people are like, are you making this up? I mean, there's that look that you get sometimes. So I saw that way more without a walking aid than with one, because if you have one, that's a visual signal. But again, I didn't have one until I was 56. So I don't know what would have happened if I had one when I was younger.
It's a strange one for me, because I have thought about it in the past about using walking aids. And a couple of months ago, I did say to my friends, we had a physio session, maybe it was few months ago, and I was really in quite bad pain. And I did say to my friend, like, I'm thinking about, I might just need some crutches or something, or walking aid. A couple of months after you'd put that post up. And in the past, I had even thought about getting a fold-out chair, but it hadn't been anything permanent, or it had just been for particular moments of pain. And for the majority of the time, I wouldn't need, you know, a chair or a stick or crutches or anything like that. So I think that's what stopped me from getting it. It was almost like, because I don't need it all the time, then should I be kind of pushing myself not to use something like that? And just feeling a bit strange as well when people have seen me walk from, say, I am allowed to park close to the building at work. Like, they've given me kind of a special kind of parking space, but I don't know, like, I don't have a disabled badge. So I haven't, you know, if it came to it and there weren't enough parking spaces there, I wouldn't be able to use that space because I don't have, you know, a blue badge or anything. So people have seen me like walk into work, and suddenly to just start using like a walking stick, I don't know, there was just this feeling of like, I was just really nervous about it, as if people would be looking at me thinking, hang on, I saw you walking yesterday, why are you using a stick now? And I think that just comes from, well, to be honest, for me, it kind of comes from, I was saying the other day, certain comedy shows in the UK didn't really do disabled people any favours. Like, one of them was Little Britain. I don't know whether anyone's watched it, but one of the characters in that was, it was Matt Lucas who played, it was Lou and Andy, was it? And he was in a wheelchair, and he'd just get out of the wheelchair at random opportunities and like just do something really active. And I think it's literally from that kind of stereotype that has made me think like, oh, I can't use a walking aid or something, because people have seen me walking around, so they'll be thinking, why are you doing that? As if I was faking it or something. Does that make sense?
It really, really does. So, oh God, there's so many things there that I want to kind of pick into a little bit more. And everyone here is like nodding their head and really relating to what you're saying, Emma. So yeah, the word faking it, like, absolutely is a word that I have worried about myself. I haven't used vocally on socials, but if we're being really raw and honest, that is something that we worry about, right? People are going to think that we're faking it. And again, I shouldn't say we, because I can't speak for anybody else, but that is something that I have personally worried about. And the other thing that you said was should, as one of your comments about whether I should be trying to avoid being on the stick or whether I should be trying to use it. You know, the word should is definitely, again, I think something that we can explore there. Has anyone else got any other experiences they want to share? Maya?
Honestly, I don't care about judgment or what would anybody think if I have a walking aid after, you know, recovery period or even now. I really don't care, because the people really don't know what we have been through. And I really feel like I've climbed Mount Everest, you know, with this. Now it's almost 8 months journey. So I'm proudly walking with those, you know, crutches, and proudly answering questions. Wow, you are so young. How this happened? Why did you have a hip surgery? But I don't find it. It's just people don't know, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, educate them a bit, even though it's a small community of my family and friends, you know, social circles. But I think it's really important. And this Instagram account that you are having, and, you know, doing these posts on awareness, I think it's wonderful. And I think it's necessary, because in Croatia, I don't have any support group on hip dysplasia, any, you know. In public hospitals, they avoid this kind of operations. They don't do it almost at all if you're not a teenager, or, you know, maybe early 20s, and that's it. So I'm really happy to be the part of this group, and please do this more often.
Thank you so much for sharing your experience there, Maya. That's wonderful. And Clara, I know you're keen to add.
Yeah, I just... I think like a lot of what's been said has really resonated with me. I mean, I've been having surgeries and treatments for hip dysplasia since I was a tiny 2 week old baby. And now I've kind of, you know, I've had them all. I've had the hip replacement and I've had the osteotomy and I've had other surgeries. And I think it's partly the kind of social public kind of shame, I guess, of being visibly needing a walking aid, and what Emma said about, but they saw me yesterday without one, so what will they think? I think is really hard. But it's also that I know that with every surgery and with every stage of the treatment I've had for hip dysplasia over many, many years, the people who love me have been willing me to be better now. And that with every surgery, it's like, this is the one that's going to stop me being in pain all of the time. And I think somehow I decided very, very recently, like the last few weeks, to start using walking aids. And it's almost like a kind of admission that actually this is the long game. And it took me this long to kind of recognize that or really admit that to myself. And I think I find that hard, but I think the people who love me find that really hard as well. So there's that kind of double thing. And I think the thing about, you know, my kind of limit to walk without pain is about 20 minutes. And sometimes I wish it was zero, because you know, there's that feeling of, oh, well, people saw me walk this far. So, you know, and a few people, since I started using a stick more often, a few people have been like, oh, what injury have you just had? And I've been like, you know that I've been talking to you through gritted teeth in pain for years. And this is the first time I've kind of made that more visible on the outside. Yeah, those are some of the things I'm thinking.
Yeah, there's something that you said there that I kind of want to dig in a little deeper with you, Clara, if it's okay. You said sometimes you almost wish that your mobility was zero.
Yeah, and I kind of, now I've said it, I feel like I want to take it back, because obviously I don't mean I wish I was completely unable to walk at all. I realise that being able to walk in lots of ways is a privilege. But I guess it's that, I mean, walking, standing, actually also sitting, like always painful. And I know I'm not the only one who feels that in this group. And it somehow feels complicated and hard to have come to a point where I'm like, I'm willing to make that pain that I've been experiencing for years visible to all of you. So like everybody that I'm in a room with will have this kind of visual symbol of that in a way. And that feels both empowering and really, really scary, I think.
Thank you for your vulnerability. I've literally got goosebumps. I don't know if you can see them on the screen, but for how vulnerable you are just then. Thank you so much for sharing those feelings. And I wanted to bring it back to that point that you made, not because I feel like you genuinely meant that you wish that you couldn't walk. I think the way that you said it really resonated with how emotionally challenging this situation is. Because if we can contemplate, you know, actually just sometimes I just wish it was one way or the other, it can really just hit home, I think, sometimes to people that don't live this daily, how much it affects us and how much of our thought processes, how much of our headspace, how much we protect and guard ourselves, how much we don't show to people day to day. And I think that's a really wonderful thing to come from this conversation, is that actually there are so many of us that struggle day to day so much more than we ever let on. And you're right about that mobility aid being a visual representation of the pain that we're already feeling, that we have been feeling potentially for days, months, years, but we don't necessarily tell people about it because of some of the social implications of doing so, and the fear of judgment or of not being accepted or whatever that might be. So thank you so much for your vulnerability there. Just Laura, yes, please.
It reminds me that I think it confuses a lot of people. And I can understand why it confuses a lot of people, that one day you can walk and the next day you'd be struggling to do that, for example. I think what we like, and I suppose it varies from culture to culture, but perhaps it's a universal thing that the ideas we have in our head of like the types of people who use walking sticks, the types of people who use wheelchairs, they're quite basic, and our ideas around old people use walking sticks. So for example, I've had somebody say to me while I was using my walking sticks, "You look like a grandma," which like, I mean, my grandma's cool, so, you know, I'm okay with them saying, but like, you know, that judge, that's not like a kind thing to say to somebody, but it I think at the base of it, what they're getting at is, this reminds me of this stereotype that I'm familiar with. When we think of wheelchairs, we think, again, people who literally can't walk, they're paralyzed, so they use a wheelchair. And any sort of use case outside of that, I think it does confuse people because they're not used to engaging with, you mentioned some of the media in the UK from, you know, God, was it like 10 or 20 years ago, but it still stuck with us, you know, this stereotype of what a wheelchair user is, what a mobility aid user is. So I think I can sort of understand why other people are like, hang on a minute, I saw you walking and now you're not. I can get it, but the effect that that has on us is, yeah, huge. And I feel it all the time, thinking, oh, but I walked. But what people don't know is, yes, I walked, probably shouldn't have because it was really painful, and I'm being stubborn because there's also like a, I don't want to feel restricted, and you know, people have spoken about those judgments. I think some people can be lovely, but there's, even if like when somebody says hello to you, their eyes dart down to the stick and then back up at you, even that experience is one that I would rather not have, and I'd rather just be me. I do notice a subtle difference in how people treat me if I'm using a mobility aid versus when I'm not. It can be lots of things, even the attention that I would get from men. Like, sounds kind of weird, but like, people won't, like, guys won't like chat to me as much or in the same way if I'm using mobility aid versus when I'm not. Like, it's, I've noticed that over the last couple of years. And like, frankly, I quite enjoyed not being hassled by guys as much. But you know, it's it does change the way that the world interacts with you and how you can interact with the world. Yeah, and so but I am torn between this. I understand why people think this and why it's confusing for people, but also I wish they would be more open-minded. I don't know. It's really tough and really interesting listening to all of you, because I'm like, yes, this. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, for me, I'm a very active person, and I rode bike a lot, and I coached spin classes. So to sort of the outward person, it seems like, oh, well, she's like, she's so fast on the bike and she beats everyone on the bike, so she must be able to do anything. And so it, like, often it feels like, because I can like ride and usually it doesn't affect me, or it actually makes things better. So I find sometimes it's like, well, people are like, oh, well, if your, you know, hips hurt or your back hurts, maybe like you shouldn't be riding so much. And it's like, no, nothing to do with that. So I find, yeah, like it's hard for people to understand that, like, yes, I can do this thing at a high level, but walking around, like you say, on concrete for a few hours, like if you're on vacation or something, that's like exhausting for me. So, or, you know, sitting a lot, or just like if I'm in a flare up and it's keeping me up at night. So it's sort of, I think a lot, like, it's very hard for people to understand that, who don't live with that kind of thing, that you can be able to do one thing one day and then not the next, or
I've particularly felt in my journey like the roller coaster of, oh my God, I'm finally getting better. And then like something's painful again. And it's the constant up and downs are really hard to like continue riding that wave. And I think like on your down days, it's as you, I've found as I go along this journey, they can hit harder and harder sometimes. And so accepting that maybe I need to use a crutch today, or like I'm in London, so I have a badge that I wear on the tube that says, please offer me a seat. I don't really want to be using them. And like emotionally, I find it quite challenging. And then when people like say these funny, jokey comments intended in a not intended in a harmful way, it can really dig deeper if it's something that you're already struggling with. So telling me that I look like a grandma, I will brush it off and pretend like it doesn't hurt, but it does.
I think it depends who it's coming from as well, because I've had comments from, so I suppose they all fall under judgments, but the you look like a grandma comment might have come from like a friend even, or someone you know. I've had somebody say to me, has anybody told you that you need to use that? I've had as though like you need permission and to use them. I've had somebody say, and medical professionals as well, is the thing, it depends who the comments are coming from and how it feels. So saying, oh, you don't want to rely on that. It sort of scrambles things in my brain, like, well, I rely on lots of things.
Since I started using a stick to get to work on the underground, I get a seat every day. Having like somebody always offers me a seat, and after my last surgery, the moment of stopping using a crutch was really scary, because I was like, I don't have this kind of visual. And anyway, and I said to somebody, what if I, like, I don't know if I could go back now. Like, I don't know if I could go back to using the underground and not having this visual sign that I need to see. And, but then what if I use it one day and it isn't because I'm in so much pain, but it's because I just need a seat? Like, that's shameful. Isn't that terrible? And of course it's not. So I also kind of think that the aid as a visible sign of disability doesn't just have to be a side effect, it could also be the reason you use it, and that's not about being an imposter or being, it's about kind of like owning that as something that you need. And that is a mindset shift that I'm still working on that.
But and I would challenge that for you as well, Clara, because you said about needing it. That word need has come up quite a lot today, and we've challenged what that word need means. And I would just put it out there that maybe it's okay for us to say that we want one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Rather than it being about needing, or whether we've been told that we need one, or that we should have one, or that we shouldn't have one. Do we want one? Is that going to make us feel better? Is it going to give us more access? Is it going to make our lives better in some way? So do we want one rather than needing one?
I just so resonate with the transport system. I kept holding one crutch when I didn't actually want it for a very, very long time, because in busy train station, it just meant that there was that visual representation of, don't come near me, don't push me around, please, because it's so scary. Like, I'm quite fragile, it's not obvious, but when I'm carrying a crutch it is a lot more. And I actually found that when I could carry a crutch rather than use it, people would notice it more, because it would be more under their eye line rather than like next to my body where they didn't necessarily see it. Yeah, and then on the like going on the underground, people, I have a please give me a badge, please give me a seat badge. People don't necessarily respond to that unless I have a crutch, because it's not obvious why I need a seat. But I would recommend getting a badge if you don't have one, because it does help a bit. you just have to be more vocal about it.
Thank you for sharing that experience. It's not something that I would have thought about doing. But again, when you think about going on a trip to London for the day and how much you're on your feet, then you start thinking about ways that you can prevent yourself being in pain by the end of the day. That's a really wonderful way to do it. And I love this kind of prevention as opposed to just thinking about relief. I think it's important that we think about ways that we can help relieve our symptoms. But if we can also be thinking about ways that we can prevent it, I think it's really, again, empowering for us to be able to do that. Okay, I can wear a badge. I can take one of my mobility aids. I can make it more visible, because we're right, a lot of us experience hip dysplasia as being one of those invisible disabilities. People don't see our pain. We don't always choose to share it. And again, that's just something that we can do that really empowers us to know that we can then enjoy more of a percentage of our day because we've done these things proactively for ourselves. We're not passively letting things happen. We're proactively choosing to find ways that we can make our day better, that we can give ourselves more relief. And yes, it does require us being a bit more vocal about it or putting ourselves out there in a way that maybe previously we haven't been as comfortable to do. But looking at this from an empowering point of view, what things that can we do that prevent our symptoms getting worse in the first place, and looking at that as a really sort of empowering stance. I love that.
I personally see mobility aids as both prevention and relief tools. I use it to prevent delayed onset muscle soreness and pain. I have come to a point in my journey where I know my body, in the sense that I know how it responds to certain stimuli, such as a longer day, a more physically involved day, tends for me to produce quite severe nighttime pain that can significantly impact my ability to sleep and rest at night. And so on the prevention lens, I have and do still use mobility aids as a preventative tool. Because if it means that I can help prevent some of that pain from coming on later in the day, that'll then impact my night or even the next day, then that's really quite worth it for me. In addition to pain prevention, I also use it with for an energy conservation reason as well. My crutches are often used to relieve my weight-bearing pain. I'm currently recovering from my 8th hip surgery on my neck of femur, and we are using it actually to relieve pain in weight-bearing in the post-op period. But even prior to this operation, whenever I had an exacerbation or a flare-up in my symptoms, that can happen with either the Ehlers-Danlos or the hip dysplasia side of things, when my hip would feel particularly sore due to a physical trigger that I may or may not have been aware of, to relieve that symptom and to allow me to move around and to relieve that pain, the crutches would help take some of the weight off my leg, and that would massively relieve some of the pain symptoms I would feel.
The prevention, I'm in pain all the time, so, and using crutches can actually be kind of a bit of a pain, because, you know, like, I often only use one. I probably use one way more than two, even when I probably should need two. But it's kind of annoying to use them, because, you know, if you're using one crutch, you've already taken one hand away, so I've only got one hand to do things with, and that's kind of a bit irritating. So I don't really use it as a prevention as such. I enjoy being able to walk when I can walk, even when it's really hard to do. I enjoy being able to do physical things when I'm able to, so I don't use it really as a prevention. Really, it's more of a relief for symptoms, but I can definitely see when it would be used as a prevention sort of thing. So I think it depends on the individual person for which it needs to be.
Something that's helped me has been to reframe my idea of what an aid is. So we use aids all the time. So a rice cooker aids me in cooking rice with more ease, or a car is an extension, is a mobility aid. Essentially, that's what a car is. It helps you get from A to B quicker and allows you to sit down while you're doing it. And so I try and sometimes when I'm on the receiving end of these comments, think this is just a thing that I use to help me do stuff. And I don't have to use a car every day. I don't have to use a rice cooker every day. I don't have to use a wheelchair or a walking stick every day. But I'm trying to expand that idea of what we all use, what everybody uses things to help them live their life in less pain. Like, we all have beds to sleep in rather than sleeping on the floor for the most part, because it's more comfortable. And so also allowing it to be a thing that I use to make myself feel more comfortable. Like, I probably could push through and be in loads of pain, but who am I doing that for? Like, wouldn't it be good if you could just use the thing that makes it easier and means you're not in more pain? You know, obviously on balance, you don't want to end up, you know, harming your body in a different way. So for example, when I use my walking sticks too much, sometimes I get like a pain in my wrist or my hand because you're sort of gripping onto stuff. And so it's all a balance. But yeah, that's been something that I've tried to think about. It's like, who is this criticism or this judgment coming from? And do I need to listen to it? And how can I reframe it?
What you said was absolutely incredible. And I love it so much about expanding the mindset about like mobility aids or aids in general. Like, I just got so many goosebumps while you were talking about that. Thank you so much for putting it from that different perspective. And that is exactly what these conversations are going to be doing, right? Is it allowing other people to change their mindset and to be able to, yeah, just open people's minds a little bit more to see things from a different perspective. And yeah, I'm really grateful for your comments there.
I wear glasses and nobody judges me for it.
Yes.
I didn't need them when I was young. It wasn't until I was maybe in my 40s when I started needing glasses. That happens to a lot of people. And glasses are okay. I also actually have a hearing aid on this side because COVID took out most of the hearing in my left ear. And for whatever reason, I think more people hesitate to get hearing aids than glasses. Like, it's considered like this, mm-hmm. Oh, you're really old if you need a hearing aid. I mean, I don't feel this mm-hmm. way, but I've encountered people that have that attitude. But for whatever reason, I'm glad glasses are okay to wear. But it's interesting to me that that is a category that seems to be totally fine.
It's very interesting that the perception and how we feel about certain things is so determined on how socially those things are perceived. And I love the example of the glasses. That was such a great example because, yeah, that is an aid to be able to see. But there seems to be no stigma, or, you know, in a lot of places, like, it's really cool to wear glasses. Like, you know, they have these new frames and stuff out now, right, that people are like actually choosing to wear glasses that have clear glass that doesn't have any kind of magnification because they look cool. And I think that's a really, really interesting concept. And that's what I love about what NeoWalk Sticks have done. And I'm sure there are other companies out there that do really cool mobility aids as well. I just don't know of them yet. So please feel free, if anyone's watching this, to let me know of any other companies that do different designs for mobility aids. But I just think if you can start changing the narrative behind it, and that's what I think NeoWalk Sticks have done, is that it can be something that you can be really proud of, and it can be like, oh, what outfit can I match it with? Or what situation can I take it with? How can I pose with it and like post a really cool picture? Like, if we can start changing the narrative about how mobility aids are perceived, then maybe one day it will be that no one bats an eyelid at somebody with a mobility aid at any age, in any situation. I'm sure that when people first started wearing glasses, that it was something that was a little different, or people maybe felt a little bit funny about. I know when I was younger, I used to wear glasses and I hated wearing glasses. I was desperate to get contact lenses, because I didn't want to wear my glasses, because there was still an element of bullying and stigma about that at school for me. But yeah, wouldn't it be cool if we woke up in a world where no one was judged, nothing was assumed, you can just use, be anything, anyone you want to be without feeling any of that judgment.
You were talking about empowerment, and like, bear with me one moment. I just want to like show you a couple of things. So we were talking about walking sticks and how powerful they can be. I want to show you, if you're interested, some of the walking sticks I have from NeoWalk. So I have quite a few. And what I love about NeoWalk is the woman who owns it, Lindsay, is extraordinary. She's so cool. She's amazing. She's got a great story as to how she came to found the company. But it's all about, like, I think it's like standing out versus fitting in. But just like being able to use a walking aid that looks like this is, yeah, transformative compared to sort of some of the, I've got like quite a few different ones, but yeah, they're really fun and they have like different handles that can come off. And yeah, I don't know, I get really excited showing people like the different colors and things, but I think having mobility aids that look a bit different, that you can like match to your clothes the same way you would a pair of shoes, those sorts of things are really, really powerful. And you know, I follow quite a lot of people on Instagram who use different mobility aids and like style their clothes and to match, people who will like paint their wheelchairs different colors and things like that. I do think there's a huge gap in the market for designers to come in and like make stuff that looks really cool and looks really nice and that's like a joy to use. Even just like the different handles that they have, like how comfortable that is to hold and like how comfortable this is to hold. It's really been thought through. I would love to see more of that. And I'm always on the lookout for like things that I can use to personalize what I'm using to aid me. One of my friends is getting married and I'm going to be a bridesmaid. And she was like, oh, well, the dresses are purple, so you can use your purple one and maybe we could like put some flowers around it. And that was like such a joyful thing for somebody to say to me, because it was so like normal, and just sort of like the same way you'd say that about another accessory that somebody had. So yeah, it's I don't really know what my point is exactly, but I'm just excited about all my walking sticks.
Your point is empowerment.
Yeah.
Right? It's feeling like it's not, you know, there have been words that we've used in the conversation today, like shame and guilt. And, you know, if we can be exposed to companies that do these things that mean that it does feel a normal part of us, it's not something that we have to feel shame or guilt around, and it's not something that we have to want to hide. It's something that we can go, look at my stick. Like, it's a very, very different experience.
I would like just to say that those sticks are so cool and so fancy. I would love to have them and show them off, you know. It's much nicer accessory than you know, medical crutch. So I would be proud to and I actually think that I will order one for myself, just, you know, to be here when I need it, if I need it.
I just shared a link in the chat, which is Diamante.
Thank you.
Would totally recommend checking them out. I was in a cafe one time on my crutches and there was a lady on a table behind me, also on crutches, but hers were way cooler. So we had a really nice chat, and like, it's nice to speak to someone who's kind of going through something similar. And she shared me this company, and it looks really cool.
So Emma, did you want to dive in?
I just wanted to draw on that whole, it feels, and I think this is part of the reason why I was so reluctant, or not reluctant, so maybe kind of worried about getting one, because it's the strange thing about hip dysplasia is that I can literally go to the gym that morning and, you know, do some really quite heavy weights, but then I'll need a stick to walk to the shop, and that's where I'd experience my pain. So I can go to the gym, and I have been like, my hip has actually been pain free like for a few weeks now. Like I've got back pain still, but the actual hip pain that I was experiencing, it was really bad. You know, I've managed to kind of sort that out, but the way I've sorted it out is by really adapting what I do. So I don't walk really anywhere. It's quite rare that I will. I did go on a walk the other week, but it's always a really slow walk if I do go anywhere. And then I'll just do weights at the gym. And obviously my job is I'm on my feet all day. But I realised just how much I actually adapt. And you mentioned about the car. And obviously, you know, if I need to go anywhere, then I'll drive, or I'll drive to a train station, and hopefully I won't have to walk too far at the other end of the train station. So it's things like that. But if you can use your mobility aid to, I suppose, yeah, just be able to walk that bit further, or to prevent the pain the next day, because I suppose that's the kind of situation that I'm in, whereas it won't hurt for the first maybe 10 minutes of a walk, and then I'll start to feel the pain, but I could manage my day, I could be pain free for maybe the whole day if I didn't do much walking. But then how practical is that, you know, if you've got shopping to do, or you know, that kind of thing. So it's, yeah, I quite like the idea of trying to prevent the pain the next day, because sometimes I won't feel it until the next day as well. And I think that is quite hard for a lot of people to understand, that your condition would affect you in that way where it doesn't hurt immediately. So I can do things and I'm mobile, but then the next day I will be struggling. And it's really hard to try and manage your life around that sometimes. So yeah, trying to use it in a more positive way for, I suppose, like even prevention as well as support when you need it, as well. I suppose that's what it made me think of. But yeah, I feel really emotional listening to everybody's situations and like stories. Like, yeah, Scott, I didn't think I was gonna be either. Like, it's really, yeah, I feel really emotional.
Yeah, I feel quite emotional as well, Emma. It's quite amazing to be in this conversation, actually. And Laura, I really loved what you said about AIDS. I also just got a rice cooker and it changed my life. So I quite like thinking about the stick and the rice cooker in the same breath. I love it. I've always been useless at cooking rice, and now I can cook rice. But like one of the things that somebody said to me, my best friend said to me after I got a folding wheelchair to use sometimes for the kinds of, not on a day-to-day basis, but for the kinds of outings that, like, my partner might say, shall we go on a walk around the neighborhood on a Sunday? And I would just be like, do you know what, by this point in the week, I just need to lie down. And having the option to do those things with less pain is really amazing. But it's been a kind of journey to kind of embrace that. And my best friend just said to me kind of similar. She was like, well, wheels are amazing technology and we use them all the time in cars. So why is there shame attached to using this amazing technology of wheels when it's a wheelchair? So I think that's really important. And I think Laura, you also said something about permission, like, well, who gave you permission? And I think that the kind of, until recently, until this summer, I hadn't thought about using walking aids long term because no medical professional had ever suggested it to me. So like it's well over 10 years since my hip replacement, and I've had so much pain since then, and I've had so many appointments with surgeons and with physios. I've talked to so many people about the excruciating pain I'm in all the time, and none of them have said, okay, surgical options might be limited, we'll explore what we can do, But have you thought about what you might want to do on a day-to-day basis to just cope with life better? And so there's kind of like, no, they never said you shouldn't do this, but the fact that it was like it had never occurred to them, I was like, well, obviously that's not something that somebody in my position would do. So I think that's quite a big part of it, as well as like who gives you permission. And this group feels like it's giving me permission, so thank you for that.
I really liked what Clara said, and Laura as well. I just want to say, as I said early on in my healing journey, I never thought of, using something to assist me on a longer terms. But I wouldn't feel, ashamed that I would need that at some point. Now that I've heard all the experiences, it just feels, yes, right, that's it. Why not? Why not? Because I think that maybe medical professionals don't advise it because maybe using something on everyday basis would debalance the body in a way. But if we are fit, if we are doing the physio, if we are, taking care of our bodies every day, or, going to the gym, doing exercise, I don't see any medical harm into, using a walking stick for a day or two, in the long term. Why not?
When Clara mentioned actually about the who gives you permission, isn't it bizarre that, you won't be advised to use a mobility aid, a walking aid, and because I think in the past I'd assumed that if you're buying your own, then it is that idea that, well, do you really need it, because someone would have told you, or the NHS would have given you one already if I needed one. It's that, because that's what I really assumed about it,
the idea of thinking about what a need is. I think everybody has a different idea, so technically, I don't need any of these mobility aids because I could just stay at home. But is that really a life that is fair for me to have to live in that way? Like, a lot of the resistance that I hear against people who don't need mobility aids, using mobility aids, is like, well, you don't need it, but when you follow the logical conclusion through to the end, what it means is that person has to sit down and stay at home and miss out on the fun stuff that you want to do. And so I think maybe changing our idea about thinking, okay, when I say I don't need this, what do I mean? Does it mean that I could do this, but I'd be in pain, or I could choose to not join in and not be involved and not go to that party or not go shopping with my friends and family or not go for that walk? I think, really exploring what we mean by need. And perhaps if anybody ever does encounter sort of a negative comment, whoever it comes from, maybe that could be a way to sort of explore that with them and be like, when you say you don't think I need that, what do you mean? Do you mean that I should just stay at home? Because I think when you sort of put it that way, it really hits home that, ultimately it's like, well, it would be easier for, like, I don't know, it's tough. I think there's a lot to do with our perception of injury versus disability as well. And disability is like a big word. But I do think, I do a little exercise in my head where if somebody asks, as if you've got a mobility aid, often people will like use that as an opportunity to sort of ask you questions about your situation because it's more visible. And if somebody asks me what's wrong and I say, oh yeah, I've got an injury, versus, oh yeah, I've got a disability.
It's temporary versus long-term, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I think we're all a bit more comfortable with the concept of short term. But as soon as somebody suggests that this is something that's permanent or long term, I think there's like a shift in perception. I don't quite know what it is. I think it might be to do with like the media representation we've had around disability and faking it and that sort of thing. But there's definitely a shift in perception. In one of them, you're still, it's like there's still hope for you. And the other one, it's like, well, never mind. I don't know, but there's definitely something around disability versus injury, and the perception of those two things.
Absolutely. Clara?
Yes. That really resonated. And it just made me think about, actually, sort of before I started using a stick a bit more, that like people who knew me really well, if we were, I don't know, out for dinner or something, and I would take painkillers, and they would be like, oh, are you in pain? And I'd be like, yes, you know that I'm in pain all of the time. Like, this is just this kind of temporary visual reminder to you that I'm in pain. And somehow the stick is now a kind of longer term. But I think there's a kind of wishful thinking. And of course, that makes sense. I guess it's what I said earlier about, like, people who love you don't want you to be in pain. That's a kind of emotional thing for them to kind of cope with. So it's a, like, I think it's a sort of, in some ways, it's an emotional journey. I think there's a lot of kind of wishful thinking. And there's wishful thinking for it to be an injury rather than a long-term disability as well, on all of our parts in some ways. But there's so much kind of stigma attached to that. And then I think the thing about, like, well, would you rather I stayed at home? I think that also, I know we've kind of been lurking around the conversation about medical professionals as well, but, you know, I've been told by doctors, I remember being 23, something like that, like around the time that I had, before I had a hip replacement, and I had a doctor who said, well, if you're going to do things like dancing, then what can you expect? And I was just like, you're talking to someone in her early 20s. And then, and no, every, people of all ages should be able to dance, and they dance with a stick or dance with a chair or not need, not, you know, or dance on their feet. But just that kind of idea, I think, is really damaging. And it's like, well, just count this thing out. And I think it betrays a kind of, even with people who have spent their whole careers specializing in hip, in hips, there just seems to be a kind of mismatch. And I was told by a doctor recently, don't push through pain, but make sure you keep your muscles conditioned. And I was like, how have you not been listening to me? Like, if I don't push through pain, I will spend all day in bed. Like, the, you know, so there's just, I just think there's a kind of a mismatch. And I think on some people's parts, it's a sort of wishful thinking. And on some people's parts, I think it's a kind of, yeah, I don't know. I don't, there's a kind of block there, I think.
But I think when you have an ongoing problem like that, it really breaks two popular narratives. One is kind of like, oh, if something goes wrong, it gets fixed and you get better, and then you're just like you always were, or maybe even better if you work hard at the gym, right? So there's that narrative, which doesn't happen if you have a joint that's degenerating over time. And then the other thing is that for something like with a total hip, that, oh, once you have your total hip, zero pain, because all the painful part is gone. You'll be back better than ever. You'll be gardening. You'll be, you know, walking around, and you'll, you know, everything will be better. And then when that doesn't happen, in my case, then people are totally confused by it. It's like, well, how is that? Why did the doctor screw up? Why is it still a problem for you? You know, it's like, well, no, the surgeon did the best that they could under the situation, but sometimes there are complications. And, you know, it's like, how much does that person really want to know? And then you have people who's, you know, we actually had that guy on your podcast who had like this amazing recovery and went back to his martial arts and everything. And, you know, it's great when that happens, but sometimes it can't. And so it's, how do you kind of negotiate that discussion? So I don't usually talk about it a whole lot unless something comes up, or with people that I know very well.
When you live with a disability like this, you get really stubborn. And what you look like you can do is not always a representation of how much pain you're in. In fact, it often isn't. So the kind of, well, I could walk, but I would just be in excruciating pain. I think, like, we do a lot of kind of masking of pain for all sorts of social, emotional reasons. And I think that kind of conveying that to medical professionals, I think, is really is also really, really difficult, because also people experience pain in very different ways, right? And I remember saying to my partner, like, oh, I think I must have a really low pain threshold because I'm in so much pain all the time. She was like, Chloe, you've got a really high pain threshold. And that, but that sense of yourself as being somehow failing if you are in a lot of pain, and to come back to the kind of walking aids, that sense of failing if you are in so much pain that you are going to resort to using an aid, and to just come back to the like wonderful rice cooker analogy, it's just like, maybe it doesn't have to be that you have to resort to using using an aid, but maybe just being able to sort of not always push through and not find your limit and stop before you get to your limit, or get help before you get to your limit, or speak up before you get to your limit. But we're all kind of conditioned to be our most resilient self, and it's exhausting. Yeah, so sometimes maybe we should be saying, it sounds like it's less empowering somehow, but maybe sometimes we should be saying, like, you don't have to be resilient all of the time. And you can be in pain, and you can acknowledge that you're in pain and find ways that will reduce it.
I think that's incredibly empowering, you know, for us to be celebrating rest days, and for us to be celebrating the use of any kind of aid that's going to give us a quality of life that reflects who we are as individuals, you know, that allows us to express our personality and our joy and be able to do the things that make us feel whole.
So a lot of our teachers are about 10, 15 years younger than I am. They're in their early 20s. And I find that generation is actually a lot more open about sort of their abilities and disabilities and things they struggle with in their lives. Like I had one teacher who said, you know, I can do this and this, but I think this will be a bit too much with me with my chronic illness. I don't know what it was, but I can't imagine 10, 15 years ago when I was that age, anyone would ever reveal anything like that. So I think there is change happening. And
the whole point of the conversations like this is to empower people. The all of the conversation that we've had about shame and guilt and imposter syndrome type stuff, like, it's all social constructs, and it's all history of media and the ways that these things have been interpreted and internalized by us. These things can be rewritten and they take time, but people like you coming on these type of conversations and being able to share your experiences are the reason that things can change, and the reason that somebody else will watch this conversation next week, next month, next year, and go, you know what, actually, if I'd have taken a stick to that thing, I would have been able to go and really enjoy that. Or, you know, actually, if I'd have hired a wheelchair, I could have gone and really enjoyed that. And it just opens up so many doors of a whole life that sometimes, unfortunately, some of us have written off because we just don't feel like it's for us. And having these additional aids and rice cookers and cars and all these other additional aids that we all use in life, this is just our area that we're using aids for. Everyone has their own troubles. This is ours. We're talking about mobility aids, different conditions. Every single person has their own stuff going on, and everybody uses aids for different things. I just love what you said, Laura. Thank you so much for bringing that concept in. We all have our own stuff. These are the aids that we use to enhance our life and make us feel more authentic, more full of joy, more better quality of lives for ourselves. I'm so, so grateful to all of you for spending 2 hours with me this morning, or from wherever you are, whatever time it is. It's been an absolutely incredible conversation. And I know that there are so many areas that are still to be explored. You know, all of your experiences and everything that you've been vulnerable enough to share today has been really so valuable. I'm really very, very grateful for your time.
I just want to say, like, a massive thank you, Laura, for putting this together. It's been incredible to hear everyone's experiences and quite cathartic. Yeah, it's honestly, what a great way to start Saturday.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
It was fun.
Thanks for letting me participate in this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been lovely to talk to all of you and meet all of you. I've never met anyone in my whole life in person with hip dysplasia. So like, I'm like, wow, other people.
Yay! Really cool. Yeah.
All right. Thanks. See you later, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye. See you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, guys.